Radio.
Brave New Womb, the Church's Take on IVF. A talk by Fennell McLaurin for the Catholic Society of St. Peter's Life Week at the University of Sydney.
Through these kinds of questions, I will demonstrate how an examination of moral acts provides us with a standard by which we can judge the morality of IVF and similar reproductive technologies. In our examination, we will also look at what the Catholic Church teaches about IVF, with a particular focus on the relationship between procreation and marital love, as well as the dignity of the human person. We will also consider how IVF commercialises children and donors, as well as a whole host of other issues that arise as a result of IVF. So, the morality of an act. Any moral act has three significant components: intention, means, and end. The intention is the desire or reasoning behind whatever it is we intend to do. The second component, the means, is what we do in order to complete the act. And the third component is the end, which is the consequences or result of the act, but it also includes significant circumstances. So one line of philosophical thought holds that an act is morally permissible so long as the intention is good. Those who subscribe to this view are intentionalists. For an intentionalist, as long as you have a good intention, even if you do something bad, what you did was not morally wrong because of your good intention. There are also those who believe that an act is morally permissible so long as the consequences are good. Those who subscribe to this line of thought are called consequentialists. For the consequentialist, as long as the consequences are good, your intention and the means by which you performed the act are not morally significant. In other words, consequentialism is the view that the means justifies the end, justifies the means. So let's take a moment to think about the implications of intentionalism and consequentialism, since neither of these place significant moral value on the means by which the act is performed. We see intentionalists and consequentialists all the time, particularly in the reproductive technology industry. Last year, Janie Cornwell's story about how she travelled to the US for gender selection IVF was all over the internet. Non-medical gender selection is illegal in Australia, so that's why she had to travel over to the US. Janie used a form of IVF known as pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, or PGD, where the embryos are screened for gender or abnormalities prior to implantation in the womb. So in Janie's case, two eggs were fertilised, creating the two human embryos, and then they were screened to determine their gender. One was male, the other female. The female embryo was then implanted in Janie's womb, and she donated the male embryo, her son, to another family. When Janie's story was reported, the focus was placed on how much Janie had yearned for a little girl, how she already had three boys, and how when the last boy was born, she was so devastated that he wasn't the little girl she had always craved that she even considered aborting him. Janie maintained that she was crippled by what she called gender disappointment. The articles went on to talk about how happy Janie is now that she has her little girl. Her family is complete. Never mind that the son she donated would probably be born by now, and never mind that when he is older, he may find out that he was created only so that his mother could have a girl. Never mind that he was not the result of his parents' love, and was not wanted because he was a boy. Never mind all that. Janie has her baby girl. If we take a look at Janie's thought process behind her decision, we will see that she uses a mix of intentionalism and consequentialism to justify her actions. Janie is quoted as saying, "If you want something bad enough, always try to get it. Never let fear get in the way of your goal, of the goal you have yourself. Never let other people's opinions affect your decision. It's about what you want and what makes you happy. It's about what you want and what makes you happy. It's not about how you get that. Now, we're not talking about some kind of morally neutral goal like running a marathon. We're talking about creating human life. For Jamie, the ethics of her actions didn't matter. The means did not matter. It was all about her desires and the end result. For Jamie and other intentionalists and consequentialists, there is a denial of the fact that it is never morally permissible to do something that is morally wrong so that good may come of it, all because of a good intention. For many of us, the idea that the end does not justify the means seems simple enough, and yet we see countless examples every day of the significance of the morality of the means being disregarded or downplayed owing to the circumstances, consequences, or intentions of a person. Abortion is another example of the means of an act being disregarded. Many people hold that abortion is a necessary evil, something bad but unavoidable. Such people believe that abortion is not a good thing and they wish there were less abortions, but they hold that it should be an option available to women in very difficult situations. This line of thought completely disregards the moral significance of the means and instead places all of the emphasis on the intention and circumstances of the mother. In some ways, this view is even more problematic because it does recognise the wrongness of the act itself, but then places an extreme emphasis on the intention and consequences with the view that these justify committing a morally wrong act. The Catholic Church, on the other hand, recognises that it is never morally permissible to do something that is in itself morally wrong, no matter how difficult the circumstances or consequences, and no matter how good the intention. Catholics hold that a morally good act must involve a good intention, a good means, which is ordered towards a good end. It is not sufficient that a person have a good intention and good end if the means by which they achieve it are morally wrong. Such an act overall would be morally impermissible. Likewise, a good means and a good end do not make an act morally good if the intention is bad. For me, this kind of standard of evaluation makes a lot of sense. It makes sense that when we evaluate a moral act, we evaluate the whole moral act. We should take into consideration the morality of the intention, the morality of the means, and the morality of the end, which includes the circumstances. It does not make sense to put all the emphasis on any single component alone, and it certainly does not make sense to disregard the means by which something is done. So these three parts of the moral act, intention, means, and end, are the standard by which Catholics judge the morality of an action, and in this case, the morality of IVF and similar reproductive technologies. So what is it about IVF that makes it immoral in the eyes of the Church? Let's take a look at a simple breakdown of the whole act of IVF. What's the intention of IVF? The intention is to have a child. What is the means of IVF? The means is the creation of a human embryo using a sperm and an egg in a petri dish before implantation in the womb. What is the end of IVF? If all goes according to plan, it is the conception and birth of a child. This is an extremely simplified and almost ideal view of an IVF situation, and yet the Catholic Church recognises that there is still something very morally wrong with the means. In this example, there is nothing immoral about the intention to have a child. This is a good desire, and one that many couples share. Children are a magnificent part of marriage. The end in itself is not morally wrong either. The conception and birth of a child is a good thing. An intentionalist will say that IVF is morally permissible because the intention to have a child, is good. A consequentialist will say that IVF is morally permissible because the consequence, actually having a child, is good. But neither of these approaches are very satisfactory, because both neglect the importance of the morality of the means, of the act itself. So what is it about the means of IVF that is morally wrong? Well, the Catholic Church upholds the vital and natural link between procreation and the marital act. The Church teaches that sexual intercourse is the total and mutual self-giving of the spouses, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Furthermore, the Church holds that any children that come from this unique union are a wonderful gift and the crowning glory of a marriage. In other words, sex and babies go together. Actions which assist or help a married couple to conceive a child, like medical treatments for hormone levels and those sorts of things, are morally permissible because they in no way replace or substitute for the marital act itself. And this is the first major issue that the Church has with IVF. Procreation is inherently linked to sexual intercourse. It is through the loving embrace of a child's parents that he comes to be in this world, and this is a good means. However, in the case of IVF, the link between procreation and the marital act is severed. Children conceived in this way are not the fruit of the loving embrace of their parents, but rather are made by scientists in a petri dish. The petri dish conception replaces the natural conception by mutual self-giving love. IVF is wrong because the means by which the child is conceived actually replaces the ordinary good means by which procreation naturally occurs. It's interesting, in Huxley's Brave New World, one of the things that readers found so disturbing was that in the society in which the story is set, the link between sex and children is strongly discouraged. The people are encouraged to have sex regularly and with many different partners, and meanwhile, children are made in labs. The words mother and father in Brave New World are tantamount to swear words. In Brave New World, the relationship between sex and children is completely severed, and this was extremely disturbing when people read the book initially, and it's not so far away now. I remember that the first time that the importance of the link between procreation and sex really hit home for me. Intellectually, I knew the reasons that the Church had for opposing IVF, and I agreed with them very firmly. But in this particular instance, it really enabled me to sort of my heart to catch up with my head. I was attending a presentation about IVF as part of my marriage preparation. During the presentation, a slide came up with two images. One image was an IVF conception. It was a microscopic image of an egg being fertilised in a glass jar. And I thought, my goodness, a baby is born. I remember feeling amazed because it was an image of life being created. But at the same time, I was disturbed because I had this really strong feeling that something was missing. The image next to the embryo was of a couple in bed, but they were not embracing. They were lying on their sides with their backs to each other, not touching, not talking, just lying. The two images together delivered a really powerful message about the reality of IVF conception and the Church's teaching, about how IVF severs the meaningful connection between procreation and marital love. When I looked at the images again, I saw new life being created in a sterile and commercial environment without love. I saw this little one coming into the world, not as the physical fruit of the love of his or her parents, but at the gloved hands of scientists after a considerable exchange of finances. And it all seemed so wrong. Now, this was just my personal experience, and I don't expect everyone to feel the same way about that conversion of heart, but it's worth sharing nonetheless. In addition to replacing the role of married love in procreation, there are many other moral problems posed by IVF. These include the commercialisation of children, the commercialisation of donors, the freezing, storing, experimenting, and destruction of human embryos, the practical mishaps that occur in IVF clinics, and a whole range of issues that come along with donor-conceived IVF, both practical and psychological. So let's take a look at some of these in a bit more depth. IVF commercialises children. One of Australia's largest IVF companies rakes in over $17 million each year in profit, with a total revenue of about $200 annually. $200 million annually. Infertile couples pay a lot of money to be able to have children, particularly if time is not on their side. And the IVF industry is ready to lend a helping hand for a price. Each round costs about $8,000 upfront, with a 50% rebate from Medicare. But many couples are not successful in the first round and need to do a couple more cycles. Now, if you pay anywhere from $4,000 to $20,000 or more for a product, you are going to want to know that the product is not faulty. You want to know that the child you are paying for does not have any health issues or abnormalities. It sounds harsh, but the reality is that more and more couples are increasingly opting for a version of IVF, this procedure where they delay implanting the embryos into the womb by a few extra days, allowing the embryos to develop a bit more along with any abnormalities, which this enables couples to have a kind of peace of mind that their baby will be healthy because any of the embryos that have abnormalities are discarded. Now, if a couple underwent a cycle of IVF and they had one healthy embryo and an embryo that had an extra chromosome, meaning that the baby would have Down syndrome, what do they do? They've paid good money for these babies. Do they really want to implant, either now or eventually, the baby that they know will have Down syndrome? I have no doubt that people with Down syndrome enrich the lives of their families in ways that they never thought possible. But many couples would be frightened about what this would mean for them, and it sounds sick, but they might think it's easier to discard the embryo now rather than implant it in the womb. In fact, already 90% of parents who are told their unborn child has Down syndrome abort that child. This commercialisation of children through IVF leads to a lack of reverence for human life. Many embryos are frozen in storage and used for scientific experiments. There is no respect for human life at this earliest stage in these kinds of matters. And this is just one of the issues that arises with IVF. The sperm and egg donor industry is booming as well, and it is at the heart of a whole host of IVF-related problems. Children from donor-conceived IVF are starting to speak out about the confusion that many of them have experienced from not knowing their biological mother or father. Donors are sharing their stories about how they started donating in the industry as a way to help families and then ended up feeling commercialised and commodified. There are those donors who have gone on to get married and have children with their spouse before the full realisation of their donations hits them too late, and they have no idea who their other children are, or in some cases, even how many there are. There are the spouses of donors who know their husband or wife has children, other children out there by someone else. There are the brothers and sisters who will never meet. There are even some donor-conceived kids who won't date anyone born around the same time of their conception for fear that they will be dating someone who is biologically related. There are the couples flipping through sperm and egg donor catalogues, reading the candidate's accomplishments and admiring their traits before picking one. There are the IVF clinics that mistakenly implant one couple's embryo into the womb of another woman. And there are the embryos created with the wrong man's sperm. There are women and men who are not romantically interested, but who agree to conceive a child together via IVF for the sake of one of their desires. There are the children who know that not only were they not physically conceived out of the love of their parents, but also know that their parents do not love each other, and in some cases, do not even know each other. There was a couple who last year enraged the online community worldwide when they spoke about the anger they felt when they found out that despite only wanting to add one child to their family, they were having IVF twins. There are the recent developments that open the door to three-parent babies, children who have the DNA of three people instead of two. there are a whole host of major moral issues that are facing us as a society as a result of IVF, and it really is starting to look like a brave new world. It is very difficult to argue against many of these developments on rational grounds if there is no significance given to the means by which an act is done. If we remain intentionalist and consequentialist in our moral evaluations, we will not have a leg to stand on. There will always be a couple suffering from infertility, or a couple worried that they will pass a genetic disability onto their child, who share their suffering publicly and assure the world that they would be so happy if they had access to the next big thing in reproductive technology, never mind the ethics involved. This is something that our society is going to have a robust discussion about sooner or later, because through IVF, we have opened a Pandora's box. Welcome to a brave new world.
That was a talk by Fennell McLaurin on Brave New Womb, the Church's Take on IVF. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.